Oh, Dr. Hill.
And Dr. Bassett? Oh, where's the patient?
I hated to drag you out of bed at this time of night.
Will you let me go while there's still time?
You'll soon see why I did.
Doc, will you tell these fools I'm not crazy? Make them listen to me before it's too late!
I'll listen to you. Let him go.
Who are you?
I'm Dr. Hill from the State Mental Hospital.
I'm not insane!
Let him go!
Listen. Doctor, now you must listen to me. You must understand me. I'm a doctor, too. I am not insane.
Right, now, suppose we just sit down over here, Dr. Bunnell, and you tell me what happened.
Well, it started. For me, it started last Thursday. In response to an urgent message from my nurse, I'd hurried home from a medical convention I'd been attending. At first glance, everything looked the same. It wasn't. Something evil had taken possession of the town.
Hello, and welcome to Book vs. Movie. This is a podcast where we read books that have been adapted into movies, and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. We are your hosts, Margot P. of ColoniaBook.com and Margot D. of Brooklyn Fit Chick. Or are we?
Hi, everyone. That's a good one, Margo.
It's October. If you are new to Book vs. Movie, every October we do spooky books and movies. And since we've been in this pandemic time, we've been doing a brand new episode every single week. And that means that we're not just doing books. We're doing other shorter literary sources, novellas, magazine articles, or a play. Or even a song, which means also, too, that we're kind of running out of ideas on a week-to-week basis. And so if you have suggestions for books or movies that you think we should cover here on the podcast, let us know. There's several places where you can do that.
Yes, we have a basic Facebook page. And if you like that page, that's great because all the episodes are posted there and they do a really nice job over on Facebook now with that. We also have a Facebook group, and that's a great place to interact with other fans of the show. Great place to just leave us suggestions for anything. We're on Twitter and Instagram, Book versus Movie. And in those cases, you spell out Book versus a Movie. And we have an old timey email. Book versus Movie Podcast, spell that all out, at gmail.com. And we look for sources, by the way, that it has to be something pretty easy for us to get, either via Kindle or the a cheap paperback or through the Libby app, which is a library app. Also, the movie has to be streamable someplace. And so the one we're doing today, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, it's streaming for free on Amazon, if you get Amazon, by the way. So that's why we picked it versus there was the more recent version, 1978, but that's on Shudder and not everybody has Shudder. So that's why we're picking this one today. But yeah, please send us your suggestions.
And if you really enjoy Book versus Movie and you would like to help us keep the lights on around here, you can support us on Patreon.
Yes, we post all episodes that are 2 years prior. So right now it's everything from October 2019 and then prior to that is up on the Patreon wall. We just put up Coraline. And you just go to Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. There's a couple of affordable options there. And there's a bunch of stuff there that's free. Even if you just want to check it out first to see if this is something you would like, that's a great place to support us. Also, sending us reviews wherever you get your podcasts. If you could leave us stars and a review, that would be amazing.
Now, if you're new, something you should know is that I, Margot P., really, I'm a big scaredy cat, and scary movies and scary books are a real challenge for me. I don't remember who suggested this book or movie, but this, I want to say, oh, you did. I want to say that this was such a good pick, Margot, because it was like that just my speed as far as scary. Like it was just the right amount of scary. It was just implausible enough that I could go to sleep at night. It was not too gory. And yet it hit the right level of scary that I could handle.
We just covered The Invisible Man and we paired it with the most recent version, which was Elizabeth Moss.
Man.
And yeah, that was pushing Margot's boundaries. Like that.
I'm still scared.
We loved it, by the way, but yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
But so great.
That was really like, I was really out there with way out there for me.
We get a lot of horror fans that send us suggestions and I'm kind of like, kind of think of that as like the top level.
Yeah. But this week's is just perfect. So the book is called just The Body Snatchers. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And one thing I didn't know that I didn't know until I watched the movie, which we're going to talk about. There's lots of versions of this story on film, but we're going to talk about the first one, the original one. And what I learned when I watched the movie, which made a lot of sense, is that the book was published as a serial in Collier's Magazine, which I was like, oh, okay, like all kinds of things make sense now. But let's talk a little bit about our author, Jack Finney, or John Finney, right?
It's John Finney, but he went by Jack Finney is his professional name. This is what's interesting. He was born John Finney, and then his father passed away when he was 3, and then his family renamed him Walter Jack Finney. In honor of his father. Yeah. A lot of pressure for a 3-year-old. I mean, it's sweet, but...
But yeah, that's a lot.
That's a lot. He writes a lot of science fiction, plenty of short stories, things that became part of the 1950s and 60s when they had all those Twilight Zone kind of things going on. A lot of his stuff was inspired into those episodes. Jack Finney is known for 2 big things. One is the Body Snatchers, which became The Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and a book called Time and Again, which I read in college, and was one of those books that people passed around like, this is amazing. It's a time. I love time stories like Time Machine and time going back in time. I just think that stuff is great. He's super interesting. His family was originally from Wisconsin. He moved to Mill Valley. A lot of his stories are set in Northern California. He gets all those details correct. He served in World War II, came back to the States. He lived to be 84. And he is our author today, Jack Finney. And I don't think they've ever made Time and Again. I was trying to find it. If they have, they haven't made a good one, because it's one of my favorite stories. It would be really cool to see. I think it could be like a series or something.
So this book, it's not a long read. We were just saying before we got on the air, it's a very quick read. Still super easy to find. It does take place in Mill Valley. The main character is a doctor. Now, one of the things, again, I didn't know when I read the book that it had been a magazine serial. And so as I was reading it, I was like the very first thing they assert in the book is they'd let you know that this is the main character and that he's a doctor. And it comes up like a zillion times throughout the book when people are like, oh, here's so-and-so. He's a doctor. Dr. So-and-so, good to see you, doc. I'm like, we all know he's a doctor. Stop telling it. It's like, do they even have soap operas anymore?
Yeah, there's a couple.
So it's like on soap operas, like back in the day, where like you wouldn't necessarily, like if you had missed a day of the soap opera, like they would just like really quickly reiterate what had happened. They're like, oh, John, I haven't seen you since you broke up with Susie at the Christmas dance. How are you? How's your mother, Gladys? You know, and they like give you all this exposition. It was like that, like over and over again. I was like, what is going on? Why are they doing this? But now I understand it's because the thing was published as a serial in a magazine, and not everybody would have read like every single installment. And so, but I guess, I don't know why we didn't like edit that down a little bit, but we didn't anyway.
Yeah, no. He's a fun storyteller. Is he a great writer? I mean,
it's not fabulous. I mean, not compared to like Invisible Man, like we talked about H.G. Wells last time, and we've been reading some really great writing lately. No, is it on par with that? No. Is it great for a magazine? Yeah.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And it was a good fast read. I think he's got a great sense of humor. He has a nice,
I agree,
a whimsical kind of touch to everything. Yeah. And his lead characters, at least the 2 books that I've read from him, the lead characters have a sense of humor and they kind of like to laugh and that kind of thing. The couple of differences that he's a doctor, not a psychiatrist, which you can be a whatever, but it's based in the 1970s and it's based in Mill Valley. So it's about 20 years in the future.
Yes. And it's in Mill Valley, which is where he's from, which is up kind of in the Bay Area-ish. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
It's very much, it's gorgeous. Yeah, Mill Valley is really nice. And yet I'm sure, you know, it still reads like it's the 50s. It's a simple story. He's a doctor. He's recently divorced. His like high school or college sweetheart is back in town. She's also recently divorced. They still have that old spark. Mm-hmm. Like when they run into each other, there's a lot of crackling, snapping, popping going on, and they keep trying to like make a date, see each other, but there's this problem. Now here's my first little like, what? So the love interest's name is Becky Driscoll. And Becky goes to the doctor. What's his name? Dr. Benner.
Benner. Yeah, it's an odd name.
Yeah. Becky goes to him and says, and at first she started thinking like, oh, she needs an excuse to see him. But no, she has like a kind of a real problem, which is her cousin. Her cousin, Wilma. So she's like, you know my cousin? And he's like, Wilma? Yeah, I know your cousin. Again, this exposition. Yes, mm-hmm. I remember your cousin, Wilma. How is she? Well, she's really concerned. You know her uncle. Okay, wait a minute. Your cousin's uncle. Isn't that like your dad?
Your dad or your uncle.
Or
your cousin.
Your uncle? Yeah, or is it her cousin? Okay, maybe it's her cousin like on the other side, but... why would you do that in the book? Why wouldn't it just be like, I don't understand why it's her cousin's uncle. It's just weird and awkward to me as a plot device. I find it like a weird, like, why would, anyway, it makes no sense to me. But apparently the cousin lives with an uncle who is not also the uncle of Becky. And the uncle is different somehow, but you can't quite tell how. And it's nothing that she can actually describe, but she just knows that he's different. And that's how the story begins. So the doctor, really because he kind of wants to spend time with Wilma, he goes with her to see, I mean, he wants to spend time with Becky. He goes with her
Wilma.
To see Wilma, the cousin, on this, like, what he thinks is a fool's errand. But it's the first inkling that things are not okay in Mill Valley.
Yes. He's a doctor, which he mentioned several times, and there's only like one psychiatrist in the area. So people.
In like the entire county.
Yeah. Now,
like all of Marin County, one psychiatrist.
We've talked about this in other shows about that take place in the 1950s. This is when a lot of examination about psychiatry happens in the media and in the entertainment that we take in at the time.
Right. Several books and movies that we've looked at from this era have psychiatry as a psychoanalysis as a theme, like The Bad Seed, which is another Halloween episode that we did a while back.
Yeah. And so there's this, we talk about that. And then we've also sort of talked about in the past about the House of Un-American Activities, which actually started in the 1930s, but it was really taking off in the 50s. So there's this fear of communism taking over America. There's also sort of this thing like people came home from the war and women had men's jobs, and then the men were overseas. The men come back from the war, the women go back into the house, to their homes, and they're supposed to just give birth and just be happy being a housewife. He's supposed to go to an office every day when he was used to doing something exciting, or even when it was boring, he was around a bunch of people that he felt useful. And so there's this sort of malaise going on. It's like the man in the gray flannel suit kind of time. That's the 1950s. He's having this take place in the 70s, so I think he can feel like he could talk a little bit more about sex and making sexy time with Becky and being together with her. They kind of both hint at, you know, we've both been married before. Like, that's kind of like Catholic speak from when I was growing up about divorced people. Like, they're very hot to trot. But they figure out pretty quickly, like, something is going wrong. Something is making people act differently. He comes across these pods, and they're basically what the whole thing, and scientists love to say this is like ridiculous, and they're not wrong, but it's seeds that come from another planet, plant itself on Earth, and then it takes a person as a host when you're asleep. And then
you must be asleep.
You have to be asleep.
That is correct. You must be asleep. And I gather you also must be in close physical proximity to this
pod
thing, which is enormous, and somehow you don't, but somehow like you just, it can just sort of live in your house without you noticing that it's there.
Yeah. It takes like the place of you, right?
Yeah.
And then you become this pod. And then this is the kicker that you find out, and this is different from the movie. I don't know if they can have sex, but they can't procreate. So they can't have kids, and they live 5 years.
I mean, it takes some time for them to kind of figure this out. So, but yeah, just to lay out, and we spoil everything in case
you
can't tell.
That's the point. Yeah.
So spoiler alert, we're going to spoil absolutely everything. But I mean, let's face it, the book is called Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah, it's the Body Snatchers.
So they're these giant pods that come from outer space. They come from a planet that had died or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so they have this imperative just to continue to live by whatever means necessary. So they come to Earth and they take over the bodies of humans as they sleep. To all outward appearances, they look the same, they sound the same, they have all the same memories, the same mannerisms, they do the same things, but they can only live for 5 years. So it's kind of a not very well thought out plan on behalf of the pod people.
Yeah.
So anyway, it takes a while for them to figure out what's going on. Meanwhile, like all these people in this little town of Mill Valley are going to the doctor being like, my wife is not my wife, or my wife doesn't seem like she's different all of a sudden, or this person is different all of a sudden. And enough times that the doctor, because he's a doctor, don't forget he's a doctor, but the doctor is starting to like put it together. He talks to his friend, the psychiatrist, and they're trying to figure out what's going on. And then he has a friend named Belichick.
Jack
Belichick,
yeah,
and
that's in
his
the movie
wife
anyway.
Teddy,
yeah.
Right?
Yes,
and they call him because they have found what they believe to be a corpse on their property, and they want their friend, the doctor, because he's a doctor, to come in and examine the corpse. And in examining the corpse, meanwhile he's got all these thoughts swirling in his mind about like all the stuff that's going on, and trying to connect the dots. As he's examining the corpse or supposed corpse, he realizes that although the corpse looks like a human being, has like scars and, you know, distinguishing features, no fingerprints. Like when they go to take the fingerprints, it's just like a blank, like I think he says like a baby's cheek, just mm-hmm. like nothing, just like a, just no marks whatsoever on the fingertips. And that's like this dun 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 moment in the book. And so anyway, so they slowly kind of work out that, and he finds a pod, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Like in his garage or something.
Yeah. There's different pods he finds along the way. And so one is like taking over Jack's body, and Teddy is terrified because she finds out that this is her husband that's being taken over. They don't know that they're not supposed to sleep, but then eventually they figure out, oh, it's when they sleep is when they get you. And if that's also, you need a pod near you. And I think like the people are kind of emotionless, or they're kind of
carefree. They don't get excited. They don't get overly, they say things like, oh, hey, how's it going? Oh, hey, right. Good to see you. But they don't get overly, they don't get upset about things that they should get upset about, or they're not ecstatic about things that they should be ecstatic about. And that's weird. And so anyway, they gradually, and the part that creeped me out the most, I have to say, of the whole book was the librarian. When he goes to the library, the doctor goes to the library mm-hmm. to look up, I forget, something to do with, you know, their investigation. And he realizes in talking to the librarian that,
right.
She's a pod person. And he pauses and he's like trying to decide what to do. And he looks her in the eye and he's like, I know what you are. And I know what happened. And I, you know, and you're not going to, we're going to figure this out basically. And
right.
You're not going to win. And she just looks at him and says, do you? Something like that. And then like turns around and walks away. And it's so creepy. the librarian was like the make my hair stand up on my arm moment of the book for me.
I thought it was, that part was really good. I thought like at one point, like he and Becky go to the movies and it's called Time and Again. So that's like his book that's coming out. I kind of giggled when I saw that, but yeah, it's pretty intense. They're always on the run. They're running away from people.
Yeah, most of the book is a chase scene.
Most
of the book is they're on the run from the pod people and they're trying to get help. They except in the book, one of the big difference between the book and the movie, there's a lot of differences, but one big one was that in the book, he and Becky and Belichick and his wife Teddy, they all four of them know what's going on. And the two couples split up. They decide to split up and each try to go get help. And anyway, so then subsequently the entire rest of the book is them running from the pod people, encountering the pod people, killing pod people, and
trying to get away and trying to get help.
People are.
And it's kind of weird because at the end, if I could spoil the ending now, it's that the pod people realize, like, this is just not going to work out. We're going to be dead in 5 years. What's the point?
Yeah, we didn't think this through.
Yeah, humans hate us. There's humans that are fighting against us and found out. And there are humans fighting. In the story, in the book, there are humans that are like, well, no, you can't take my body. And no, I'm not going to put up with this crap. And they fight back. And so the aliens just sort of float back. They just sort of...
Yeah, the end of the book is that... by this point, the aliens, the pods have taken over like everything, the government and the phones, they're listening to the phones. So you can't call for help. And yeah, they eventually like realize that they hadn't thought this takeover Earth plan through very well. And at the end is the pods floating back up, and they're large. They're floating back up into space, leaving the few humans who are actually humans left on Earth. The doctor and Becky, and eventually they find the other couple who are also still okay. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, they've been left with this Earth that's like now like
ravaged.
There's hardly anybody left. And yeah, all the resources are all messed up. They have a lot of mess to clean up.
Right.
Now.
And that's the story. That's it. And it gets reviewed okay. I think it was just a hit with Colliers. And, you know, the magazine articles do get adapted into film sometimes. And we've talked about quite a few of them. This one happens, I believe it's the November and December issue of Colliers in 1954. It gets bought and then it's published into a book. But at the same time it's publishing into a book, they're filming the movie. And should we play the trailer now for the movie? It's pretty great.
It's a good trailer.
Doctor, will you tell these fools I'm not crazy? Make them listen to me before it's too late!
Listen to me. Please listen. If you don't, if you won't, if you fail to understand, then the same incredible terror that's menacing me will strike at you!
They come from another world, spawned in the light years of space, unleashed to take over the bodies and souls of the people of our planet, bringing a new dimension in terror to the giant super scope screen.
It's whatever intelligence or instinct it is that can govern the forming of human flesh and blood out of thin air is fantastically powerful, beyond any comprehension.
A cursed, dreadful, malevolent thing was happening to those he loved.
This isn't just an ordinary body, is it?
I never saw one like it. It looks unused.
The sensational star discovery of The View from Pompey's Head. And now an undreamed of horror makes her life and love a vortex of fear.
Jack! Miles, where do they come from?
I don't know.
Suddenly, while you're asleep, they'll absorb your minds, your memories.
I don't want any part of it.
You're forgetting something, Miles.
What's that?
You have no choice.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spreads. As the unimaginable becomes real, the impossible becomes true.
Stop and listen! Stop and listen to me! Listen! Listen! Listen to me! They're not human! Everyone, they're here already. You're next.
All right. So one of the big credits, and you'll notice this at the top of the film, is Walter Wanger. And it's like Walter Wanger Productions presents blah, blah, blah. Okay.
Yeah. There's he's all over this thing.
There's a story about him that's fantastic. It's a podcast called Love is a Crime. Karina Longworth is the host of it, and she co-produced it with Vanity Fair magazine. Walter Wanger was married to Joan Bennett, who we talked about for Father of the Bride. They were married. They had a very tumultuous relationship, let's just say. In 1951, Joan is having an affair with her agent. He didn't like this. He shows up at the agent's office. They're in a car together coming back from their love nest. He shoots the agent a couple of times. The agent lives. He doesn't die, but he gets arrested. He goes to jail for 4 months.
Walter Wanger gets arrested.
Yes. Comes out. And then Walter Wanger, pretty much, he was a producer before. He becomes a producer again. Joan Bennett had to work her butt off to get any kind of a career after that. She was the one that was considered, you know, had the scarlet letter, not him. I know. But that's so, as you see, Walter Wanger. I mean, if you've been watching, listening to the podcast, which is really great, once again, it's Love is a Crime. But we have Don Siegel as our director. He directs Dirty Harry in the future, Escape from Alcatraz. He's like a guy's guy. And one of the people that's in the cast is Sam Peckinpah. He has like a really small part. He was like,
I know. Like, yeah, and wasn't he like the dialogue coach or something?
He was the dialogue coach. He tried to take credit for writing the script, but he didn't write the script. It's, you know, people are funny in Hollywood, but they create this movie. All these movies are coming out at the time, and it's about space and science. And it's funny in that America and around the world, once World War II is sort of sorted out, the next thing to conquer is space. And we're terrified that the Russians are going to take over the moon, that we have to be the ones in charge of it. So there's all these space stories
that come out. Because naturally.
Why wouldn't you pick Americans? And then, funnily enough, Americans had a lot of German scientists who were with the Nazis. And they came over. It was a thing. So all this is happening in the culture. We're smack dab in the middle of that decade. Very conservative time.
Plus all the anti-American activities, right. Anti-communism things going on.
Right. And just like what's going on in homes and what's going on. You know, this is a few years for the civil rights movement, but it's gathering dust. People are, and Jack Finney does mention black people, by the way. He does mention, okay, I mean, he's a little more, I think, inclusive than you get in Hollywood at the time. But it's Kevin McCarthy is our lead. I think he's so handsome.
He is. No relation. He is. And he does a really good job.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised how much I got into it. But they set it in modern day times for the time. It's in the mid-1950s, and it's a fictional town, Santa Mira.
Which is such a, like, everything's Santa this or Mira that.
Yeah.
So to name it Santa Mira is very funny, I thought.
Yeah, which is true. Dana Winter plays Becky Driscoll. So they were not big stars at the time, but it was kind of a big chance to give to them. King Donovan plays Jack Belichick, and Carolyn Jones plays Teddy.
Come on.
I mean, yeah, she's amazing. They're... It's pretty much the same thing. In this one, though, he's an actual doctor. He's not a psychiatrist, right? And so, like,
he's like the town's like family doctor.
Yes. Everybody goes to him. Everybody calls him. He always gets these house calls. People call him all the time. He's divorced. And his Sally is his secretary, meets him at the train stations immediately, like, okay, we got a bunch of people. Some crazy stuff's happened since you've been on vacation.
Yeah, which I really like. This is something that's not in the book. In the movie, he has just returned from some kind of like medical conference convention thing. And so his very handy for the exposition, his secretary has to fill him in on the way into the office. And she's like, all these people have been in. Oh, boy, are you going to be busy? Becky Driscoll's back in town. And this is the other thing. I was like, she's like, even that fat cop, so-and-so. And I was like, oh, cool. There's going to be a fat cop. And we'll know that he's a pod person when we see him. Awesome. Okay. And anyway, so then they go to the office and there's nobody waiting to see him. Oh, and then there's a whole thing with that little boy.
Well, the little boy,
that was a great device. I thought that was really good.
Well, they almost run him over. They're driving really fast down this back alleyway, and then it's Grimaldi's or something. I want to say Grimaldi's because that name is on my brain.
That's right.
Yeah. So he's coming out of it's a little boy coming out of the house, and he's saying, "My mother or my grandmother is making me go to school, but that's not my mother. That's not my grandmother. I don't know that person. I'm scared." And he's like, "What are you talking about? Of course that's your, you know," but that it's, you're getting these things from different people. And then you find out that different people are saying, "That's not my wife. That's not my sister. That's not my teacher. That's not my student." Everyone's like, you know, talking about like not recognizing family members or friends or people they work with. And he has to one by one start going to people. And he's recommending to the one doctor in Marin County or Santa Maria, who's a psychologist, to visit with these people. So he's helping him make the appointments. He goes, "Oh, tomorrow at 2. And I'm like, "That's not how it works today, but okay."
I know. No HIPAA, I guess.
Exactly. There's no calling. There's no begging.
We just talk about everybody's business just out in the street in a convertible.
It's just, yeah, you get it. Yeah, you need an appointment today. Tomorrow's better. Great. Go right ahead. It's pretty much the same plot. These pod people, they start to notice.
Oh, except Becky shows up at his office. What is she wearing? What is this woman wearing?
Remind me.
It's supposed to be just like an ordinary day, right? And she's stopping. Okay, yeah, she's stopping to see her old boyfriend. She is wearing a strapless day dress with like all this foofy ruffles on her boobs. Just like, "Here are my boobs." It's so weird. And she's carrying a purse. I can't believe like this outfit made such an impression on me. I was like, "Hold
the phone."
I
don't even remember it.
Oh my gosh. As soon as she walked in, I was like, "Hang on a second."
No, I was, I'm more childish. Yeah. I sent you a picture. When they go to a gas station, there's just this big sign that says lubrication. I couldn't help but take a picture. I'm a child.
So yeah, she's like, I just don't think you would go to a doctor's office in the middle of the afternoon, in the middle of the week, dressed like that.
There's a lot of things that don't make sense.
She's carrying one of those plastic, like mid-century plastic purses, like mm-hmm. when the whole purse is made of plastic. It's really cool. Anyway, it's quite an outfit. It's quite a showstopper. And here she is, and she's like, and this is where she's like, you know, you remember my cousin? Again, I don't know, why did we change this for the script? "You remember my cousin? Your cousin Wilma? Why, yes, I do. Well, you know her uncle, who's not my uncle, or related to me in any way." Why?
She's having a problem.
Why can't it just be her mom and dad? Why are we doing this?
No, there's a whole thing, like the friend says, "Oh, my parents died when I was young, and that person raised me, and every time he talked to me, in his eyes, he would look at me with such kindness, and it's all gone." That's the whole point. And they're like, "Well, that's a drag. Well, we'll see what we can find out." And they're going to different places, and they go to visit their friends, Jack and Teddy, and they're at their house, and Teddy says, "Hey, there's a body in the yard. Can you take a look at it?" And this is the 50s. Everyone's in a suit all the time. Like, nobody ever loosens their tie.
He wears a suit all the time, and she's in a strapless day dress.
In heels. She looks great. I mean, she's like...
Oh, it's amazing.
They look great together.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. He sees the body, and then she's saying, like, "Oh, it looks like my husband. Oh, my God." They somehow figure out, like, so Jack and Teddy are at their house, and the doctor and Becky leave. Miles and Becky leave for some reason, I forget. But all of a sudden, the body is still in the living room, and then the body.
Right. So that's why he tells. Then this is different. This is not in the book, mm-hmm. but the doctor, Mark. What is his first name? The doctor's name. Let's say it's Mark.
There's Kaufman. Is that who you're talking about?
No,
Miles.
Miles. Okay. So Miles tells Jack Belichick, who's got the body on his billiard table, "You two stay here. Watch this body." Because they think the body, accurately, they think the body is somehow turning into Jack. Although at the moment, it doesn't look, it just is the same size and weight.
Right.
And as as Jack and his wife are watching this body, it indeed turns into Jack, right down to a recent cut on his hand, and they freak out and run. Yeah, that's really scary.
Yeah.
And he takes, so then Miles, the doctor, takes, Becky home. Is that when he takes her home and that's her, and her dad's there?
And her dad's there.
And Sam Peckinpah's in the basement.
Yes. Sam Peckinpah's, or he's reading the meter. That's his job. He's
supposed to be the gas man. He's the gas there reading man. The gas meter, supposedly.
Right, right.
Just to let himself in and is down in the basement reading the meter at night. Like you do.
And they hide at his office for the night. And then they see in the morning, there's all these trucks coming up with filled with these pods. And these pods are big. And it's hilarious because they are obviously made of like cardboard or something, because people just toss them around.
They weigh nothing.
Nothing.
People are just throwing them around like that. Like somehow they contain a whole human body, and people are just like just tossing them around like it's popcorn or something.
Yeah.
These massive, massive pods that they're hiding places without anybody noticing that they're hiding, like a pod the size of a check-in piece of luggage.
Yes. Yeah, your overhead. You could put it in your overhead. It fits in the overhead on your next flight. I'm not flying anytime soon.
They're very funny. They're very implausible. And eventually, this scene is very spooky in the movie. When they find the four of them. So now the two couples, for a moment, the two couples are together and they're like, oh, crap. And they find pods in the greenhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And the pods open up and there's like foamy bubbles coming out. And there's like a model of each of their bodies, like inside the pod, and then he kills them with the pitchfork.
That was good.
That was really scary.
That was interesting when they did that. They created body. They dipped all. They all had the four lead actors had to get naked, and then have this waxy thing plastered
it's
over
the
their bodies. Yeah, that's what they did for special effects.
Wow.
And Carolyn Jones said she had a problem with claustrophobia, and this did not help at all. They were like in this wax gooey thing for hours and hours and hours, and they had like a straw. That was it. And they only had the one for each of them. So it had to work the first time, or they were screwed. But they do find these pods, and these pods are turning into the actors. They look like the actors that they're representing, and there's all this screaming and yelling, and this is when it does become this chase scene. And at some point the cops are in on it, the cops are following them. They go to the gas station, and boy, that wife that comes in with the windshield wiper thing when she's like, hey, how you doing, what are you doing here? I'm like, ah. After the lubrication scene, like that she just showed.
And they're like, all of a sudden her husband's like in the trunk of their car. And they're like, oh, I'm sure it's nothing.
30 seconds. They were the whole thing. It took no time at all. But, and then they take off, and then they pull over, and those people had put pods in their trunk in the time that it took them to like get, hey, Mac, give me 2 gallons of gas. Like, what was that? $1? Like altogether.
And also like that big boat you're driving, where are you, going like a block and a half on
Cars used to be huge, people. They used to be huge.
Well, huge enough that you could easily hide 2 pod people in the trunk.
In the trunk of your
car.
Without
anybody noticing.
But they're
weighing the car down at all.
Yeah, it didn't weigh the car down at all. But they get rid of those pods, and they're taking off, and they're being chased, and the police are after them. And at some point they realize it's an extraterrestrial life form, and that they have to destroy them, or they're going to destroy the human race, all of mankind. And it's different in the book. They just give up. They just kind of.
In the book, yes, the pods go back up into space of their own accord.
Yes.
Leaving just a handful of humans behind on Earth, we're led to believe. Whereas in this movie, I think the chase is really good. The chase is really freaky.
The stairs, you were mentioning that in the Where are those stairs located?
Those stairs are no joke. So in Los Angeles, as many of you know, the Hollywood sign originally when it was built to promote a real estate development. And they were selling off tracts of land in a development they called Hollywood Land. Originally the sign said Hollywood Land. And it was built kind of near, not far from where the Griffith Observatory is. Mm-hmm. And there are all of these granite staircases that cover this whole like little development. And there's a lot of like, there was a lot of like castle-y themed architecture. Like there's this one really famous house that looks like a castle where Moby lived.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was built as part of the original development. It was built in the 20s. And the granite, and these stairs are like, they're no joke. Like people run them, like athletes do these stairs, you know, it's a whole thing. And, they have their own reservoir. The Hollywood reservoir is just for that community of people. And the granite that those, there's lots of walls and the staircases, all of that is made of this granite that was quarried nearby in the Bronson Quarry, which is also like when the pod people at the end of the movie are like gathered and she's calling down to them, that's in the Bronson Quarry, which most of us know as the location of the Batcave from the 1960s Batman television series. Like when you see the Batmobile come out of the Batcave,
yeah,
that's Bronson Quarry. So that granite from Bronson Quarry built those staircases. So that staircase is from early 1920s. And yeah, they're known to be like crazy long and steep, like ridiculous, like a run of 80 steps at a go, you know? And when you see them, they're going towards the staircase and you're like, oh, you are kidding me.
I mean,
there they go, like running up the stairs and they're running. And you're like, is this, that staircase is really that long? Like, I forget how many steps it is. It's well over 100 steps. They're running and running and running up the steps and they're hiding in the, you know, one of the caves of the quarry there. And this is the only part of the movie that I don't quite get, because she falls asleep for a second.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's brief. Are we to presume that there are pods somewhere in this cave? Because
it's,
how did that happen?
Unclear. They escape, they go up the stairs, and the actors, apparently they shot this thing like 19 days. And but
yeah, that's the other thing, is they shot this thing in a hurry.
Yeah,
so we don't have time, you know. That's why we only made one cast of each actor for the pod people.
Yeah,
that's why you don't see him actually put the pitchfork through the dummy, just in case,
just
we didn't get it on the first take.
Yeah. And so there's reasons for everything, but he's wearing loafers, like men's loafers. She's wearing heels, and they're going up concrete steps. And if they did it once, they had to do it a dozen times. I mean, just to get every angle.
I'm
exhausted.
Exhausted just watching them. They yeah. look so, especially like they get to the top of those stairs and they're just like, I mean, they look genuinely.
And the director's
been running
like,
for days.
Keep going. You got to keep going. And they're just like, what are you kidding me? And they just keep going. And so she falls asleep. They sleep with this plywood over them. First, they have this plywood that's over them to protect them from the people chasing them. And then they get away. They stay the night. They manage to get away. And then he just to look over the canyon, wherever, just to see what's going on. In that brief time he does that, she falls asleep. And then he goes back to her. And it's a really good scene, I think. Like when he comes back to her, he starts talking to her. And
oh,
then he
it's
realizes,
great.
Yeah, like she's
yeah,
a pod
which
person.
This does not happen in the book. Like this is totally different from the book.
We can't make it without sleep.
Yes, we can.
Happened.
Oh, Becky.
They were right.
I should never have left you.
Stop acting like a fool, Miles, and accept us.
No. Never.
He's in here! He's in here! Get him!
One thing about the book is that There's a lot of drug use. When they're hiding out, yeah, remember when they're hiding in the book, they don't go on, they don't go up the stairs and all that stuff in the book. So in the book, there's this whole section where, and this is in the movie too, where the pod people have trapped them in his office, the doctor's office.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point we think like, this is it in both the book and the movie. They've brought two pods in and there's Becky and Miles, the doctor, and we're just going to wait it out for them to fall asleep. Eventually they're going to fall asleep and the pod people are going to take them over. In the movie, they create a ruckus and they overtake the people who are guarding them, the pod people who are guarding them. And they stab them with some kind of sleepy time drugs.
Right.
In the book though, Miles has an unlimited supply, it seems, of Benzedrine.
Doesn't he give a little boy a pill when he's talking about his grandmother? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm remembering this now.
But
yeah.
in the book, he has Benzedrine.
Yeah.
And so...
It was so popular then.
Yeah. He's like, we don't ever need to sleep again. So he and Becky take turns dosing themselves with Benzedrine.
Grinding their teeth and being really annoying.
Yeah. So like one's going to be awake and the other one's going to... The one that's awake on Benzedrine is going to watch to make sure the other one doesn't fall asleep and vice versa. So the whole like last part of the book, they're both just completely like whacked out on Benzedrine.
Right. They're tweaking.
So they don't ever fall asleep in the book. That does not happen. She never turns into a pod person. But in the movie, so we don't have that in the movie at all. We're not shooting up with Benzedrine.
No.
every 3 hours. But so in the movie, like eventually they're in this cave. They're kind of waiting for things to blow over eventually. And they're doing everything they can to stay awake. But he leaves her for just long enough
that they could get her.
Yep.
And then he runs away. And he's trying they're trying to either go to San Francisco or Washington. Like they have to try to get help. And he's trying to find a truck or somebody that could pick him up on the highway. And apparently he was so tired. The actor, Kevin McCarthy, was so tired and so exhausted that he begged them, please be careful. Cause they're all stunt drivers on that scene that he's like, it looks like he's on a highway and he's going to get run over. And he realizes they're all pod people and he's screaming, you know, they're here already. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And they were worried he was going to get run over because he was so tired. He was delirious.
He looks exhausted.
Yes. That's not acting. I don't think. I think he looks like he's
sweated through his suit.
Yep.
He's all like got the stubble and bags under his eyes. Yeah. It doesn't look like makeup. He looks like genuinely like
just
the very end of his rope.
Yeah. And at that point, there's this flashback scene, which nobody wanted, by the way. This is the movie studio coming in.
Yeah. The whole thing is framed. And again, this is on the studio's behalf. Unlike the book takes place in real time. The movie has this device where we're getting as not a flashback, but as a flashback, he's retelling, mm-hmm. he's telling what happened to him. He's been dragged into we don't know, is it an insane asylum? Is it an emergency room? He's in some kind of medical setting and, he seems really, not to have a grip on reality and he's trying to explain what happened to him. And then we go like back in time and he tells the whole story. So then of course we end up back at that hospital setting where he's like, and that's what happened.
Yeah. They're saying, well, eventually man overcame these people and that's why we're so much better now and we're safer now. And it just sort of leads to that. Like, it's okay. There was this problem. It looked hopeless, but somehow it didn't. It's okay.
And, yeah, they're no match for the American government.
Right, exactly. And yeah, or it's just, you know, like leftover Hays Code. Like, they don't want somebody to go unpunished or they don't want to leave. And another thing is that in the movie, in the original script, they had a lot more jokes in it. And the movie studio was like, well, people don't want to laugh and scream at the same time. I'm like, yeah, they do.
Yeah, I don't know why. And so because of that, and I don't, and it's just, it's fine. I mean, that's not like, it's fine. But because of that, like the dialogue seems like really like very like too serious. Like it takes they take themselves, everybody takes themselves so seriously. Like when he goes to see at the very beginning, when he goes to see the cousin Wilma, he goes to see Becky's cousin. Like Wilma is so serious. Like she's not even happy to see her cousin who's been away, who she's really close to. But that whole thing is so weird. Anyway, she's so serious that it's odd. It seems like stilted. It makes it. But on the other hand, it makes it very to those of us like in the 21st century who have seen other, you know, the Twilight Zone is after this movie. But to me, it felt very Twilight Zone, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, where you've got a limited television schedule and we got a lot of exposition we got to get through, people. No time for jokes.
Right. And so they did try, Kevin McCarthy and Dana Winter, they do have some patter, some banter that goes on between them, which is kind of cute. I mean, they're trying to, when they can, you know, when they can, they put that in there, but it's mostly kind of serious. But they end it that the police and the FBI work together to stop this and everything's okay again. So there's no, that's it. And it does incredibly well. It's very successful. It was like $400,000 budget. They made millions on it. And it's now considered a classic. At the time, scientists gave it a hard time. Some reviewers didn't like it so much. You know, horror movies and scary movies definitely weren't respected then. That was like schlocky.
It's for kids.
For kids.
Yeah.
That's not for grown-ups. Right. And he, like Toffee Faye, it's for kids, not for grown-ups. Anyway, I'm delirious now. But in 1978, there's the remake that stars Donald Sutherland. And then there's been a couple of others. Nicole Kidman's done one. There's been, and the theme in and of itself has been done many, many times. And I thought it was interesting because I'm writing a book about Brooklyn movies, and it's Noah Baumbach did The Squid and the Whale and Marriage Story. When he was a kid, his parents got divorced, and they got divorced around 1978 when that movie came out. He saw the movie and he said it terrified him that, and he related that to divorce in that, like, the person you love becomes somebody totally different and unknown to you. And that's kind of like the theme of this is like people just, you think you love and they love you back and they're just not, they're pod people now. It's that theme. It's been going on many, many times in many films, but this is the big one. It's the one that everyone kind of talks about. And I think this movie is super enjoyable. I think it looks great.
It really does. I mean, the pods are hilarious.
Yes. The pods are hilarious.
They clearly did not have like the hugest budget on earth, but I think they do a really good job with what they have.
Yeah.
I think that like the lighting is excellent. I think they really use the lighting really effectively. The locations that they chose, like a lot of Los Angeles, it's shot in Los Angeles, a lot of Los Angeles locations, I think they use super, super effectively. Whoever did this, whoever like planned all the locations and the art direction and all that, was super smart and probably very experienced and was able to crank it out like under, and whatever it was, like 2 weeks.
And they shot 19 days, and they shot 6 days a week. They must have been exhausted.
That is intense.
That's intense. Yeah. And like we said, the people didn't used to think that those things were important. In 1994, the film was listed in the National Registry. It's a preserved film now. And like we said, many, many remakes since then. But I watched it twice. I super enjoy it. It's
really good.
It holds up.
And I think what sells it, you know, even though, again, like I agree, the dialogue, we could have some levity there. We could take a second.
We could take a
here beat. And there. We could, yeah. I think because that all the way around, like, there's a lot of people in this movie. There's a lot of interacting with random townspeople, including the quote unquote fat cop who is not over. He's not even like,
no, you were like,
overweight.
Where's the fat cop? You were texting each other last night.
I went back. I was like, is this who they're talking about? Yes, it is. He doesn't even have like a little tummy bulge over his belt or anything. Like this guy's not in the least overweight. I'm sure he's in a healthy BMI range. I don't know why he's the fat cop. Maybe they recast him. I don't know. But there's a lot of like townspeople, you know, like the lady at the gas station and the fruit stand lady and just all these people that you realize through the course of the movie, like they're probably all pod people, the cast, like all the way around, every single person in this movie is so solid.
Yeah.
And I think that's what sells it.
But driving home, I had a lot of questions and no answers. How could Jimmy and Wilma seem so normal now? Surely I had done nothing to cure them. Maybe they wanted me to feel secure, but why?
Well,
hope you didn't forget the steaks.
I never forget anything.
Don't worry about him. He's completely housebroken.
I need a martini, Beck.
Onion or olive?
Doesn't matter. I want to pour it on the charcoal. I can't get this stuff to burn.
Oh, a martini isn't dry enough. I'll get you something to start it. Mm. For drinking purposes. You're looking shipshape.
Thank you, sir.
Here we are.
The way that potty in my closet was formed. Miles, where do they come from?
I don't know. If they are seeds or seed pods, they must grow someplace on a plant, probably. And somebody or something wants this duplication to take place.
But when they're finished, what happens to our bodies?
I don't know. When the process is completed, probably the original is destroyed or disintegrates.
Scott.
No, wait!
Sorry, but I take a dim view of watching my own destruction take place.
There isn't any danger until they're completely formed. We learned that last night at your house. Your blank didn't change right away.
Not until you fell asleep.
You know, so you can get beyond like the very silly looking pods.
Yeah.
And some of the other stuff where you're like, huh? I think it's because the cast is so, so good. Like, I really like at the very beginning, the uncle, the very first pod person that we encounter is great. I mean, that guy is, I think he does such a great job.
Yeah. I mean, also it begins with Richard Deacon. He played Mel on Dick Van Dyke Show.
I know. And he was Larry Mondello's father on Leave It to Beaver.
Oh, okay.
Remember?
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's got great people. Carolyn Jones, if you don't know, she was Morticia Addams in the original Addams Family.
I just love her. I think she's so good.
She's great.
She's always so good. Yeah. It sounds like she maybe wasn't the most fun on set, but
no, and she didn't live a long life. She died in her 50s.
Yeah, she had some kind of a cancer. Strange illness. I forget what it was exactly.
She was on TV's Capital, that soap opera. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, she's so beautiful, but she's also just as an actor, I just always find her so fascinating, and no matter what she's doing. Everybody in this. Mm-hmm. Is like the guy that plays Belichick, I think, is superb.
Yeah, they're all really great.
The dad, actors. Sam Peckinpah. Oh my gosh! So there's a scene in the movie that I is scary in the movie, but in the book I found it absolutely chilling. I thought it was so much scarier in the book, where Miles, in the movie, it's Miles is looking into, I think he's looking into Rebecca's house. He's like looking through the windows of Rebecca's house. Mm-hmm. And like all these random pod people are in the house, or there's just somebody's house. And they're talking over with this woman about turning her baby into a pod baby.
Oh, right, and, right.
Right. And they all know each other. And he hears them talking about himself and Becky and trying to figure out what to do about them. In the book, which is creepy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a very creepy scene. In the book, it was even creepier. Like, that's, the librarian was definitely the scariest moment for me. This other scene was the second scariest, I would say. In that scene, he goes to Wilma's house and looks through the window, and he sees Wilma's aunt and uncle. And at first they're just like saying ordinary stuff. And then somebody mentions him. Somebody's like, oh, you know, Miles is looking into this. And he goes, oh yeah, I know. And Becky's back in town. And they start the two pod people start reiterating the stuff that they had said earlier to Miles and Becky, and in this like weird flat monotone voice, and it's so scary.
It's a great story.
It is. It's a really good idea, and it's a good story. I wish so. My wishes are. My wish for the book was that it was edited a little cleaner, so that we had a little more continuity. It's a little janky in places, and I think that's the pasting together of the serial of it. But it's a great story, and it's definitely scary. And then the movie, I think that I am amazed at what they were able to do with the budget of this movie. I think they ironed out most of the story issues. I think that the choices that they made that are different from the book, I think they work. I think they're good. They're definitely more cinematic. Yeah, I wish that they, I just wish that they had had a little more, you know, a little more light moments here and there, but it's still, it's super good.
Yeah, it holds up. It's streaming on Amazon. Check it out. Which did you like better, book or the movie?
Movie.
Yes,
I gotta go with the movie. I think the movie just really, first of all, it's just so fascinating and so well done. But even though it's very silly. Oh, I was going to say, in the book, there's this scene when they're in, they're holed up in the doctor's office and they're taking all the Benzedrine. The way they get out of there is they fool the pods into, instead of taking over their bodies, they fool the pods into taking over these two human skeletons that the doctor has.
Right, he has in his closet, and he hung his jacket on that. Like that.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. Like the whimsies there.
Nice
like
touch.
Yeah,
right?
That was a good touch. Yeah, he was. He's kind of funny. He's kind of different and quirky, which but I think I can has see, a little personality. Like,
the special effects maybe weren't up to that level.
Yeah.
So we had to come up with something else. So I'm not mad at it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's super good. I really really liked it. I think it really holds up.
Yeah.
You know, you totally are willing to forgive the constraints of the budget and the era. And I think it's because the acting is so solid and the production is so, you know, even though it's low budget, like they did such a solid job with the locations and everything.
Yeah. They did a lot of day for night stuff. That was really cool too.
It looks good. It gives it that eeriness.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's a total budget thing, but it really lends a lot to the movie.
Yeah. So you had an idea for what we should do next.
I do. I don't know how I have not thought of this over all these 7 years that we've been doing this podcast. This is the first October. Like I finally had the little light bulb moment because I always am like, oh, they're scary. And it's just like, okay, I'm just going to muscle through whatever we're doing. And I forgot that there's a scary book that I really like. And it's a short read. And I've never seen the movie. And it is The Picture of Dorian Gray by Oscar Wilde. Which I first read in high school. I have a copy of it here somewhere. I've read it a couple of times over the years. It's great writing, as I recall. And I've never seen the movie. Have you ever seen the movie?
I have never seen the movie. It's Oscar Wilde, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The movie apparently stars Angela Lansbury, who we love.
That's perfect.
Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to be the next one. We're super excited about that. Please be sure to follow us on all the things. If you have ideas for us, we have this month. We've also have the holidays. We've done just about everything at the holidays. So if you have some suggestions.
Oh, yeah. We really need ideas
for
the holidays, people.
I was thinking today, Margot, actually, because somebody had a really good idea. They joined the Facebook group. Disney is based on a lot of like fairy tales. The old Disney classics are based on fairy tales. There's also Grimm's fairy tales. There's some cool ideas there. I'm sure there's a lot of differences between book and movie. But please check in with us. Once again, follow us on all of the things. And Margo, where can they find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com and all of my social media callouts are at She's Nacho Mama. And where can they find you?
You can find me on social media at Brooklyn Fit Chick, mostly for Twitter and Instagram. My site is brooklynfitchick.com. Thanks again, and we will be back. I'm giving up. We'll be back soon with a new episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Book vs. Movie podcast. We are a part of the Frolic Podcast Network. You can find more podcasts you will love at frolic.media/podcasts. We follow the hashtags LadyPodSquad and Potter and Family. If you want to support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, go to P-A-T-R-E-O-N, and look for Book versus Movie Podcast. We have a basic Facebook page, but we also have a private Facebook group. Go to Facebook and type in Book vs. Movie Podcast Group if you want to join that. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Book vs. Movie. Spell all those words out. If you'd like to send us an email, it's Book vs. Movie Podcast, spell that all out, at gmail.com. You can follow Margot D. at Brooklyn Fit Chick on social media, and Margot P. at She's Nacho Mama. Thanks so much again for checking out our show, and we'll be back soon with a new episode.